Hi there, and welcome to Sentinel Watch, where we look at life through a spiritual lens. I'm Jenny Sawyer. What's one of the best ways to start the new year? We think it must be focusing on prayer and how to pray even more effectively. So we're revisiting this really helpful podcast from our archives. When Christian Science practitioner Deborah Packer last joined us on Sentinel Watch, she shared several remarkable healings that made listeners wonder, how does she pray? Well, that's why we invited Deb back to talk about that on today's show, which is part two of our prayer series. Now, if you haven't heard part one, you'll want to go back and listen to that, but after you hear this show. Last week's guest, Bob Cochran, shared some really great insights you won't want to miss. But back to Deb. We wanted to see what light her practice of Christian Science could shed on the topic of healing prayer. So let's dive in. All right, so let's start out with this question. We have a lot of listeners who are regular listeners on Sentinel Watch, and they hear week after week people talking about how they've prayed about this or how they've prayed about that, whether it's something from their personal lives or some issue in the world. And some of them might think, oh, well, I know how to do that. But others maybe feel like, huh, that feels kind of out of reach. How do you pray? What's a starting point for you, Deb, when you are feeling the need to pray about something?
Always, and this touches on what we talked about last time, always the most important thing for me is listening. Mm. Not telling God things, but listening. You know, asking questions. What do I know about this God? What do I need to do here? Is this the right activity or the right action? And then just being quiet and knowing that because there is one God, one mind, and I am inseparable from that mind, if God knows, then I will know all that I need to know.
Mm.
And that seems to work well for me. Do you want an example of that?
Well, sure. Does something come to mind?
There was one time that my sister and I were traveling on a plane back from Bangkok to Sydney, and I had my sister on one side and a lady that I didn't know on the other side. And before we even took off, it became really obvious that the woman next to me was not well.
Mm.
And I asked after her, and she said, I feel so sick, I don't know how I'm going to do this flight.
Aww.
And she fidgeted and she fussed and she just looked beside herself. And look, I didn't have permission to pray for her. She didn't ask me, but I'm always responsible for my own thinking.
Mm.
So I just sat quietly. I pretended I was reading my book. And I just said to God, what will I know about this? And the thoughts about the real man just flooded in. And I saw man as being so strong and wise and shiny and bright and perfect. It just filled me up. And I mean, not just males, but that includes all of us generically, the spiritual identity of us all I'm talking about. And I saw that really clearly, almost like images of how strong and shiny and perfect man was, that it just filled me up. I forgot all about the woman sitting on the side of me, and I just reveled in that thinking for a while, and then I went on reading my book. And a bit later on, my sister was in the toilet queue behind this woman, and the woman said to her, you know, when I got on this plane, I was so sick, I thought I might die. She said, and look at me now. She said, I'm perfect. And she sort of bounced around to show how. She said, go figure. How does that happen? Beth, my sister, came back and told me what she'd said. And, you know, I'd forgotten that she was unwell. I was so filled up with the truths that God had given me. And I think it's just because I just humbly went and said, God, what do I need to know? You know, I had to be alert that I wasn't saying, because I didn't have her permission to pray for her, then it's not my responsibility. I had to know that I'm always responsible for my own thinking, and I go to God for that.
Somebody from another denomination might say, why do you have to ask someone else's permission to pray for them? Can you explain that little nuance?
Yeah, never have to ask permission to pray, but to pray specifically for a person, I think, is a little bit impertinent to do it without them asking. Like when someone asks me to pray for them, it's like them inviting me into their mental space and saying, help me see this more clearly. And she didn't do that. But that doesn't mean that prayer is not effective.
Yeah. Maybe just unpack this in case listeners are curious. Why do you think that worked, that you just being filled up with those truths that God was giving you had an effect on her? Like what went on there?
I think it's like if two people are in a dark room and only one of them knows how to turn on the light. If you turn on the light, you both see the brightness. And she was, I guess, in my mental sphere.
That's a beautiful experience. I wonder how you might answer the question if somebody said, well, I try to listen, but then I don't hear anything.
You do have to get self out of the way.
What does that mean?
And that's tricky because we're always thinking, here's me and I've got my thoughts and I've got my needs. Like spiritual growth comes when we get rid of this sense of ourselves as separate from God. When we really start to understand that God's mind is our mind, there's no separation. And therefore, what you need flows in. But I do think it's a matter of practicing. Like you say to me, how does prayer work? I don't think I'm ever not praying. God is the one I listen to and the one I talk to. So it becomes a way of life. If you go around in your own head and thinking that you're having your own thoughts and then something comes up and you think, oh, I better listen to God.
Right.
You're not really tuned in. You know, it's a new thing for you. And I think too, the practice on the little things is really important, that there are many things in life that maybe seem to go a little wrong, you know, like you slop your coffee or, you know, papers on the floor, but they don't frighten us. We just deal with it. And then when something big comes up, we go, oh, I must pray. But I think being alert all the time to pray, like pray without ceasing, like it says in the Bible. I remember once my sister told me about an article she read in the Christian Science Sentinel. It was written by a Christian Science practitioner. And she talked about how she wanted to pray without ceasing. And she asked God what she should practice. And the message came, practice there are no accidents. Mary Baker Eddy puts it this way in Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. Accidents are unknown to God or immortal mind, and we must leave the mortal basis of belief and unite with the one mind in order to change the notion of chance to the proper sense of God's unerring direction and thus bring out harmony. So every time, you know, she dropped a hairbrush or a pen or something, she practiced thinking about that concept that there are no accidents. And she got really good at that and it helped. And I thought, oh, I've been thinking about how I might pray without ceasing and I could use that. So I said to God, what will I pray? And again, the message came really quickly. Also pray there are no accidents, but also include man is not made up of brain, blood, bones, and other material elements. Man is made in the image and likeness of God. Man is spiritual. Now, that's one of the first statements in the definition of man, from Science and Health, the textbook by Mary Baker Eddy. And I thought, okay, I'm going to do that. So, you know, like I say, if I slopped my coffee, I went, there are no accidents. God is always in control and I cannot be clumsy. If I banged my elbow, you know, I claimed both of those. And I did that really consistently for about 3 weeks. And then one night we had a visitor for dinner and my teenage son wanted to show the visitor something. And he ran up the hall quickly to get it from his bedroom. And he didn't know. At that time, we had a big black dog, Monty, and he was asleep in the hall, and my son didn't turn the light on, and he fell over the dog. And between them, they crashed into this plant that I had on a bit of a friendly stand, but it was huge. It was as big as I could lift, and it crashed down across the end of his bare foot. Now, my son's a toughie, but he was writhing on the floor in pain.
Aww.
And I got up from the table and ran to him. When I got there, I could see that his foot was already not the right shape. But I didn't even have to think those two things. You know, I was so practiced. I had no doubt that man is not made up of brain, blood and bones, and that there are no accidents. You know, and as I walked in the room, in the hall, he looked up at me like all was well. Didn't say anything, got up, went to his room, got what he wanted. Nothing else was spoken of for a couple of days. He had to work the next day as a furniture removalist. It was a big day and it was his school holiday, so he's working. And I said to him after about 3 days, how did you go with the plant incident? And he said, oh, it only hurt for about 30 seconds and then it just stopped. He said, I never thought about it again. You know, being prayed up all the time is such a safety net that you're just listening to God. You know, he gives me different things to pray about. You know, at the moment I'm praying about, since God is all, then there is no room for evil. And there's only one mind, God. I mean, doesn't the world give us so many opportunities to pray that? I mean, there are times when I do a more structured prayer. Mary Baker Eddy tells us it's really important to know the error that you have to deny. It's not the denial that heals, it's the affirmation. And so I think it's important not to analyze mortal mind too much. You know, we've got to deny mortal mind, not say, what are you thinking? If there's something to be uncovered, God shows us.
Maybe you could explain, when you say we don't need to analyze mortal mind, just say a little bit more about what that means, because people may not be following what you mean by that.
Mortal mind is what Paul refers to in the Bible as the carnal mind. If God is the divine mind, mortal mind or the carnal mind would be the thoughts that are not coming from God. Often people say to me, you know, I must have something in my thinking. I must be maybe a bad person, or I'm thinking incorrectly for this challenge to come on me. And I think, no, not really. Don't go there. If there's something to be uncovered, knowing the truth will make it disappear. You know, if you're under the illusion that 2 and 2 makes 3, as soon as you realize that, no, it's 4, then there's nothing to deal with anymore. It's the truth that heals. If we're analyzing mortal mind, we're saying that we have a mind separate from God. So I'd say don't go there. But often it's really obvious what the problem is, you know, that we're believing that there is evil in the world or something. Our prayers should always start and finish with God, the allness of God, the allness of the one mind. And if we're looking at, you know, ourselves as having flawed thinking, then that's starting from a wrong premise, that there's another mind, that we're separate from God. So it's important, I think, not to go too deeply into that human scenario of what might be happening, but to go straight to the truth.
So when you talked about affirmation earlier, tell me specifically, I mean, a lot of people use the word affirmation like, well, I'm affirming that, you know, I'm going to get something that I want, or, you know, positive affirmations like I'm worthy, things like that. What do you mean when you're talking about affirmation?
It's stating an absolute truth, the kind of truth that we get from the Bible or from Mary Baker Eddy's teachings, that God is all, that God is love. Mm. Even those two statements cover pretty well everything, isn't it? If God is all and God is love, everything is love. And in love, it's perfect harmony. There is no inharmony in perfect love. If we accept that God is truth and that truth is all, truth is perfect. There's no flaw in truth, no error. Again, no inharmony. Stay with the absolute truths and let God take your thought where it needs to go.
Yeah, I like that description, because I think there's often, for me at least, kind of a transitional moment in prayer where it moves from me affirming what I know, or almost at times it feels like reciting to myself, you know, what I know to be true about God and what that means for me or the situation that I'm dealing with, to it switching to, it's almost like God affirming himself. It's like that truth is revealing itself, that love is showing me what's real. And I love it when that happens, because, you know, it just, it takes out of this is a process that I have to do.
Yeah.
And moves it to this place of, hey, this is God loving you. And part of God loving you is God showing you what's true, which naturally, you know, obliterates whatever the lie seems to be and brings about a healing.
And you realize that everything is already okay.
Hmm. Going back to this topic of unceasing prayer, I mean, I absolutely loved how you described this, because it just seems so doable. And I love the idea that we can either, you know, have a thought from God that we're just working with and putting into practice moment by moment through our days, or that we're going through our days just listening for the ideas that mind is knowing. I do think that some people might say, well, you know, I have a hard time focusing on something spiritual, even for a couple minutes. How am I supposed to do this unceasing prayer thing? What would you say to that?
We all do that.
Very true.
Oh, yeah. Not alone there. It becomes a habit. How did Mary Baker Eddy describe it once? She said, I keep my violin tuned, so to speak. She said, you know, you don't just go to a concert if you're a violinist and expect to play. She said, you practice every day and then you're ready. And I liked that analogy, that you must be ready. When something comes up that seems fearful, or, you know, more scary than spilling your coffee, then you're ready. You're ready. You've got the tools. You already know God's there and you're listening.
Mm. What about in those moments when it feels like fear is just taking over and it almost seems like you can't even get a clear thought? Any ideas for how we can work through prayer in those moments?
I remind myself that God doesn't need my thoughts to be true.
Mm.
You know, my fear can't stop what's true. You know, if I doubted gravity and dropped my pen off the table, it'd still fall on the floor. So in a way, I just go, yeah, you know, humanly I'm feeling fearful, but I'm not going to take any notice of that.
Mm.
You know, it's not going to stop what God's doing. But I've got my favorite hymns that I go to.
Mm. These are from the Christian Science Hymnal.
They are, yeah, Mary Baker Eddy's hymns in particular. the one that starts, "It matters not what be thy lot, so love doth guide." I mean, how can you be fearful if you really believe that? They calm me down. This is a little tricky question for me because I don't often feel fearful anymore.
Oh, wow. But, you know, give me some of that.
I've learned to trust God in so many ways that it's now how I think, I guess. I just go over to you, God. You know, all right activity is God's, not mine. And he doesn't make blues. He doesn't get under pressure. He doesn't make bad decisions. I can rest in that. And know I'm not alone. Sometimes feeling alone or feeling that we have a responsibility for something can bring on the fear. Just recently I did a bit, I'll tell you. My little dog Tess, just recently when I came home, she had a back leg that wouldn't work, was just hanging limp. I don't know what she'd done, but she was in a huge amount of pain. And she's this tiny, cute little white fluffy thing. You know, you feel a real sense of motherly responsibility for her. And I took her in and we sat on the bed together and I tried to pray, but she was in so much pain she couldn't settle and she was even vomiting. And the thought came, you know, you can't let her suffer. You should take her to the vet. And I thought, well, if I really believe Christian Science works, that's the quickest and the simplest way to deal with this. Taking her to the vet, you know, is there's time in there and getting an appointment and all the treatment. She needs help right now. Do what you need to do, Deborah. And I guess I was quite firm with myself because I was tempted to be fearful in the sense that I felt like she was my responsibility and I wouldn't let her suffer. But I did take charge of myself and I said, no, you go back to what you know and you do it properly. And I just turned to God and again said, what will I need to know about this? And the answer was really clear. She's safe. She's mine. Then there are no accidents. How many times have you practiced that? You know, God said to me, we know that. And a sense of calm came over me and that responsibility or fear left. And it was evening and I thought, well, if I really believed that, you'll get up and do the evening chores like you should be doing. So I did. And she jumped off the bed and followed me and all was well. Yeah, I think you do have to be firm with mortal mind.
I love that healing. It's such a good one. And I'm sure Tess was very happy about it too.
Pretty pleased. Oh, yeah. Racing around. Yep, doing boomies. Yep.
I want to talk just a little bit about your concept of God, because I think in order to pray effectively and to be able to trust, as you've been talking about, and even to have kind of this daily ongoing conversation and listening, we have to have a sense of what God is that isn't, you know, a man in the sky or isn't both good and evil. Because, I mean, why would you want to trust a being that's both good and evil? So can you tell me a little bit about, based on your practice and study of Christian Science, what God is to you? What's been meaningful?
On a personal sense, God is my best friend, my confidant, my partner, the one that I turn to. And you might ask why, and I think, well, I'm still finding out about God. I think we all are because, gee, he's infinite, so there's always more to find out about, he, she. But the quality of love is really important to me in that if God is love and he's all, then I know I'm safe. You know, life is safe because God is love. But the other quality or synonym for God that we're given is principle. And I really love that because that says that love is not random. It's not just because you've been good or, you know, you've obeyed the rules. There's a principle to it that love is always unconditional. principle makes things certain. And I count on that with God, that there are laws, that love's not just a feeling, it's a law, because God is also principle. I count on God being mind, infinite mind, that he knows my needs. He knows other people's needs, you know, the people around me, that I don't have to preempt what people are thinking or think, you know, how can I say the right thing to get it? God knows. Because the law of love is always active, it meets every need. So for us, it feels like he knows our needs. When I'm talking to people on the phone, I always just let God put the words in my mouth. I think he knows. And sometimes I say stuff and I think, wow, that was pretty good.
Where'd that come from? Oh, I know.
Yeah, not from Deborah.
Right.
And people go, oh, that just met my need. It's a huge concept, you know, getting a handle on God. And I'm still working it through. But what I've got so far works for me, and I expect that it will get more and more glorious as I find out more.
Mm. I want to ask one last question. Let's talk for a minute about praying for the world. I think a lot of us tend to think a lot about praying for ourselves, praying about the stuff in our lives, maybe immediate family, obviously our pets, you know, things like that. But what about praying for the world? Are your prayers for the world different in any way than prayers about stuff in your own life? Because I think one thing that can feel intimidating for people is just like, oh gosh, this stuff seems so big and overwhelming. Like, I don't even know where to begin.
Oh yeah. Or I've got so many problems of my own. How can I think about that?
Right. That too. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I can feel like that. Every time I do pray, then I apply it to the world.
Mm.
These human scenarios that come up are just like the stage that Mortal Mind is working on, and they're the opportunity to know more about God. But God's not, his laws are not restricted to, you know, our personal problems of lack of finance or, you know, having a headache or a cold or something. The laws are universal. And if I'm claiming it for this particular situation, then I need to claim it for all situations.
Mm.
And that helps me to cover more of the world situation. You know, in my practice at the moment where I'm practicing there is no evil, I mean, that comes up in many ways. If somebody rings me and says, you know, they've got a headache, well, that's an evil because it's not good.
Mm.
But also you can look at the world and say, well, there's, you know, it seems to be climate change, or there seems to be politicians who aren't honest or don't have integrity or whatever, you know, things come to mind. The same rule applies. Because God is principle and law, it applies everywhere. So I just broaden my thought. I don't always make a big issue of taking a world problem. Well, sometimes I do. But in the everyday, you can deal with it by broadening your thought beyond the immediate and saying this applies always in every situation.
I love that. And, you know, in a way, we're already practiced at doing that, in that when we've had a healing in our own lives, or we've seen the truth of something that we are discovering about God, then if that comes to our doorstep in another way, it's really easy to think, well, I mean, I've already seen that such and such is true, and so I know that this thing, you know, couldn't possibly be going on. I mean, I just think it's so cool that it really is this ripple effect almost without us even trying sometimes.
Absolutely. Yep. And you've become a bit more aware of things that are impositions in that area. And you can knock them down mentally. Not believing that one.
Deb, it is always such a treat to get to talk with you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Jenny. Your questions are wonderful, and it's always good to be with you.
I've been speaking with Deborah Packer, a Christian Science practitioner from Canberra, Australia. And thanks for listening to Sentinel Watch. a weekly production of the Christian Science Sentinel. I'm Jenny Sawyer. I feel like we've had a nice deep dive into a variety of aspects of prayer with both Deb and Bob Cochran last week. You can find a link to Bob's episode right on the Sentinel Watch page. Go to sentinel.christianscience.com/audio. And, you know, we'd like to hear from you, too. What new insights have you gleaned about prayer that have helped your healing practice? Please let us know in writing via our survey or send in an audio clip. You can find both options on the page I just mentioned. You've been listening to my conversation with Deborah Packer, a Christian Science practitioner from Canberra, Australia. And thanks for listening to Sentinel Watch, a weekly production of the Christian Science Sentinel. I'm Jenny Sawyer.
This podcast is produced and copyrighted by the Christian Science Publishing Society.